Hi, everybody. This is The Simpsons Show. I'm Robbie with my co-host, Matt, and we are here to talk about The Simpsons from the beginning. Matt, how are you?
I'm wonderful and glad I'm not at the top of a snowy mountain, which is not something Robbie can say.
I'm not at the top of a mountain. It's not even snowy here anymore.
As of what, last week?
2 weeks ago.
All right. It was 96 degrees here 2 weeks ago, so
we're in the
relatively.
40s. We're in the 40s today. High in the 50s, but it's been in the 60s.
Mix our weather together.
It's been in the 60s. It's been in the 70s. Like this week's been in the 60s and 70s. It's been absolutely beautiful. We've gone on walks after my wife has returned home from work, and it's been a gorgeous day. As we saw spring hares coming out, they're going back from white to gray fur. Green everywhere. Grass is green. Trees sprouting. Flowers everywhere. It's beautiful. It's the 3 months out of the year where this place is hospitable.
The outdoors is hospitable anyway.
Yes, exactly. We are brought to you by supporters on Patreon. You can support us by going to patreon.com/TheSimpsonsShow. For only $2 a month, you gain access to all of our bonus content. We have a person to thank, Matthew.
We do.
We do. Christopher Garcia. Thank you, Christopher.
Thanks, Christopher.
On to this week's episode. It is Mountain of Madness, episode 4F10, originally aired February 2nd, 1997, written by John Swartzwelder, directed by Mark Kirkland, finished 38th in the ratings, a Nielsen rating of 8.8, approximately 8.5 million viewing households, the second highest rated show on Fox that week following King of the Hill. I believe this was the Boy Scout slash Heron death episode of King of the Hill.
Yeah, that was a weird one.
I liked it. I think I liked that episode. It was the first appearance of Cotton proper, I believe.
Was Cotton in that one?
I mean, flashbacks. Flashbacks.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. The couch gag is Grandpa's asleep on the bed and the couch slash bed, and they fold him up inside and sit down. Poor Grandpa. Shouldn't fold people up in beds.
Well, no, because they can get, it might be good for your back, but probably not.
I don't think that's good for your back.
It might be, you know, backs are weird. I mean, you've had Dr. Homer's patented spinal cylinder. It's kind of the same, right?
Not quite, because that's just one motion. That's just a one folding motion. This is like, you're folding twice or three times. Bodies aren't meant to do that.
Fine.
My body can fold one time.
Just one?
Singular fold. Singular body fold.
Well, Robbie, I think you're deficient.
I mean, that is true, but I don't think it has anything to do with body folding. I'm not a stretcher.
You should do more yoga. Then you can fold yourself in all kinds of fun shapes.
DDP yoga?
What? DDP yoga?
DDP, Diamond Dallas Page. WWE Hall of Famer, Diamond Dallas Page. Now that he's retired, is a yoga man.
Well, there you go. That sounds perfect.
I have done his yoga. It is, I mean, it's okay.
Is it challenging for you?
It can be. There's different routines.
Cool.
The episode begins with Mr. Burns and Smithers, Burns is bored, not having a very exciting day at the power plant, which is unfortunate.
Well, you know, I imagine a lot of workplaces are like that, where you're just hanging out and everyone comes by once in a while to, you know, chat with you. You hang out by the water cooler. Mr. Burns doesn't have any peers, so he just hangs out in his office.
With Smithers. Smithers is not, is with him, at least.
Yeah, but he's not a peer.
Burns is peerless.
Exactly.
Except for the name of what's the Greek guy?
Aristotle Amadopoulos.
Amadopoulos. That he's a peer, I guess, technically.
True, as was Nigel, the guy from this past week's episode.
Let's try and forget about that. I would prefer to do that. But he is bored and he wants to liven up the plan a little bit. And the best way to do that is through a drill.
Ah, we need some excitement around here.
Chinese checkers or domestic, sir?
No, something fun. Something the men will enjoy, like a safety drill. But what kind? Meltdown alert, mad dog drill, blimp attack. I think a good old-fashioned fire drill today.
So Burns triggers the fire drill. I like your note here, Matt. Stupidest employees ever.
Yeah, it's like, have they never been in elementary school? Because we did a lot of these fire drills in elementary school, and you just leave. You don't go grab stuff. You don't run in a circle. You just get out of the building as fast as you can.
I do like that Homer grabs his photo of him in Western gear, an old-timey photo. think that is very valuable. You need to save that in case of the if the plane is on fire.
That's true. You can take more pictures of your kids. You can't take. I mean, it would cost a lot more money to, you know, get that redone.
It's yeah, it's replacement value. That's really what Homer is looking at. He's like, well, I can get more pictures of Maggie. Homer locks everyone inside and therefore wins the fire drill. He's the first one out. That's how you do fire drills.
Yes, only the winner survives. Everyone else dies.
Everyone else does die. I mean, I think that the employee's reaction to the drill is representative of Springfield's reaction to any kind of danger. I think it is just, this is a microcosm. I mean, what happened when the Bart's comet threatened them? Mass panic and chaos.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah, it must be a Springfield thing. They're not good at preparing for emergencies.
They're not good at anything. What are they good at? Name it.
Being fat. World record.
All right, that's fair. Fair. You got me. You got me. Burns, basically, everyone eventually gets out of the plant well after the 15-minute time limit of the stopwatch is gone. And Burns is angry and decides to take everyone at the plant to a corporate retreat to teach them. Does he actually say what he wants? Like world team building or something? Or just teamwork, probably? Is that, I guess that seems to be. It is the theme of
teamwork,
the,
yeah.
Of the teaching. Homer talks to the family at the dinner table about the retreat.
So Burns is going to make us all go on a stupid corporate retreat up in the mountains to learn about teamwork, which means we'll have to cancel our plans to hang around here.
Teamwork is overrated.
Huh?
Think about it. I mean, what team was Babe Ruth on? Who knows?
Yankees.
Sharing is a bunch of bull, too, and helping others. And what's all this crap I've been hearing about tolerance?
Your ideas are intriguing to me, and I wish to subscribe to your newsletter. But I think we have to go on a retreat anyway.
I wish to subscribe to your newsletter.
I have used that phrase so very many times. Ironically, I never actually want to subscribe to his newsletter because it means I get physical mail or email, and neither are things I want.
I subscribe to a couple newsletters, email newsletters. Warren Ellis's is weekly. It's very good. It has good book suggestions and interesting. He has interviews with other writers in there sometimes. Yeah. Okay. If I had a newsletter, Matt, would you subscribe?
I don't know. I'd have to try it for a few weeks and see whether it was good enough.
I mean, that's all I can ask for. Try, you know, at least a temporary trial period. That's better than nothing.
I suppose.
Also, Babe Ruth also played for the Red Sox. Like, that was the whole thing.
What was the whole thing? I mean, his most famous years were as a Yankee.
The curse. The Red Sox curse.
Oh, right.
Because they sold Babe Ruth. That's, like, that was the thing about them
for
100 years. I mean, not quite 100 years, but nearly. So they go on the retreat. It's up in the mountains. It's snowy. So it gives us a little bit of I guess it's probably near winter, fall or winter, I would suppose. I mean, there's snow in mountains a lot of time without just independent of the season, but you would think that layer and level of snow would probably be a cooler month. No opinion, Matt?
Not really, no. I mean, I've never been to a snowy mountain. It seems nice.
You've never been? Ever?
No. I mean, I've been to a place where there's snow, but never to a mountain.
Never been to a... you should go. It's cool.
Maybe someday I'll get to go.
I mean, you have... you can go on a vacation to places, can't you? You went to New York City.
No, sorry.
You went to New York... Hey, okay, this is a direct... I'm texting your wife right now. Take Matt to Snowy Mountain.
There. I don't know if she'd be up for that.
She'd do it just to expose you to a new environment, because she thinks that's good for you.
That's true. She's wrong, but you know.
But there's trouble... They have trouble parking. If it's just snow, that's not that bad to park. It's not that hard to park in. If there's ice on the road, then it might be that difficult. You gotta watch out for the ice. That's the trick.
All about the black ice.
I mean, real ice is... You can see the ice. It's not a problem of seeing it. It's a problem of navigating it. But Homer shows up along with his family. Apparently, no one else has brought theirs. He was not supposed to bring his family.
All right, let me start off by telling you this will not be a walk in the park. This will be the most arduous and backbreaking weekend of your life. I cannot overemphasize the dangers which... Did you bring your family, Simpson?
Yes, sir. I thought I was supposed to.
Imbecile. Simpson, your family will have to remain here.
Oh, man.
Don't
worry, kids. This is a national park. We can have lots of fun.
I'm afraid that's no longer true, ma'am. Budget cutbacks have forced us to eliminate anything the least bit entertaining. Well, see ya.
Oh, that's going to get even worse. Pretty yeah. soon, they'll just be death traps.
I was going to say, I'm like, this is in 1997. There was budget. We were talking about how bad the national parks are.
Now we're just going to sell them off to whoever wants them.
Yeah, hey, do you want to destroy this national park? It costs
$4. There you go.
I don't know. This episode, everyone talks about kind of the madcap, insane stuff with Burns and Homer later on. But I feel like I honestly think the best part of this episode is kind of just how low-key, like, some of, like, how, like, kind of boring, quote-unquote, like, a lot of this, it, like, I like that. I kind of like the slice of life, kind of like, hey, here, they go on a corporate retreat in the mountains, and it's just like, hey, it's just the kids at a park, and it's kind of like a very observational, weird, absurdist, boring kind of adventure that's all very, it's very character driven, and I like how the writing is like, yeah, it's going to be absurd and dumb, but it's going to be that way because, and like really it kind of explore like these characters when they're not necessarily like everyone except for Homer and Burns are kind of just having a normal day at on a mountain.
Well, yeah, I mean, like you said, it's super laid back. Like, basically, the characters are allowed to talk, and that's where the humor comes from. I mean, obviously, rocket houses and things like that are kind of funny towards the end, but most of the time, it's just them saying funny things, which is, you know, not the norm for The Simpsons, because, you know, they're an animated show, so a lot of humor comes from wacky situations. Not always, but there's usually a little bit in every show. In this show, it's really just rocket house.
I mean, yeah, it is the Burns and Homer kind of paranoid danger kind of it brings in that kind of the weirdness, the non-realistic part of the story. But everything else in this is very kind of just exploring like day to day. Hey, go to this park and dealing with how dumb things are sometimes in life, and I don't know, it
especially really, work things.
Yes, it explores that, like the how stupid companies are, and also how I don't know how we've constructed our parks and how badly they work in a lot of ways. But the family's stuck at the ranger station or around. They're on their own. But we learn about how this retreat, quote unquote, is going to work, and that everyone's paired off. And they have to make it to a cabin. Does the number one team actually get anything?
I don't believe so. I think the number one team just gets to hang out in the cabin and not out in the snow, which seems like a pretty good reward.
I mean, they have champagne and sandwiches. Not bad. I'll take some.
Moderately priced champagne, thank you.
I can't tell the difference.
Champagne is gross.
It's fine, I think. I think it's definitely not my top even 10 of alcoholic beverages, but it's fine. But I can't tell it, like, fancy champagne, I can't tell the difference. And I think I'm pretty much off of champagne pretty much forever after Mimosa Gate. I think I'm done with champagne for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
You were there.
Fair enough.
You weren't there for you weren't there for the worst of it.
I don't know to what you refer.
We went to brunch at that place in Fort Lauderdale, or not Fort Lauderdale, in Boca Raton.
At Rebel House.
Rebel House. Yes. We went to brunch at Boca Raton.
And you had way too many mimosas. I remember now.
I had way too many mimosas, and that was a bad day. That was a bad day. No more mimosas for me.
Well, yeah. I mean, you gotta control your mimosa intake, my man.
Everyone was there. It was a happy time. I wanted to be extra happy. It didn't really turn out that way very well, though. Everyone gets two-person teams. We get Lenny and Carl, who are paired together, which Carl doesn't, and that's another thing. We get, you know, we get some Lenny and Carl time. You know, we don't really see a lot of focus on them. We get some time with them. This is even,
in this particular episode, they're kind of fighting.
Yeah, they're, you know, it's a squabbling couple kind of thing. Smithers expects to be paired with Burns. He is not. He is paired with himself, which he actually ends up with Bart and Lisa, theoretically. And then Homer gets paired with Burns, actually, and he realizes that's for the best because Burns ain't going to get fired because the last team that arrives gets fired. That's not really a good... You might not want to pin the success of your company on a wilderness survival, like, test.
Yeah, that doesn't seem to be very applicable to, you know, running a nuclear power plant.
I don't, but Burns...
I mean, if it is, that seems pretty rough. I mean, that doesn't seem exactly safe. Like, oh, you better climb this mountain to work on the reactor.
I think representative of Burns. And, like, he's relatively calm. Like, he's not as evil. This is not super evil Burns in this, for the most part. It is relatively... I think they kind of twist that, like, evil... corporate Burns thing into, like, he's a little Hank Scorpio in this one. He's a little bit more like,
yeah,
a little bit more throwing, like, hey, we're gonna do a modern corporate thing, but he just, it's like, it's still a little evil, you know. He's not full-on Hank Scorpio, obviously. He's just a little bit,
he's
closer.
Not trying to go to the East Coast.
No, he's just more of like, hey,
the East Coast could probably need right now, you know, just saying.
I would need to see kind of a blanket statement about Hank Scorpio's policies before I really want to declare my loyalty. Before I want to declare my loyalty to Scorpio, I would like to see, you know, where he stands on EPA regulations.
That'd be nice. I mean, having a stance besides, let's get rid of everything.
I don't want to just say that he's my, I'm not going to back any candidate just, you know, without seeing, I need to vet Hank Scorpio is what I'm saying.
I'm sure he has very well thought out policies, if his corporate policies are anything to go by.
I mean, I don't know about that. I mean, I think you should wear shoes.
Okay, shoes when you run. That's personal. I'm not talking about his corporate policies. I mean, they have beer in the lunchroom on Fridays. I don't even like beer, but that sounds like a great idea. I mean, they have a stock plan that helps you invest. Full Dental? I mean, come on. That man takes care of his employees.
Full Dental's pretty good. But... And that is basically how the act ends. We go to commercial with everyone going out into the wilderness trying to find their way to the cabin.
When we come back from a commercial, we see the rest of the family enjoying, if you can hear the air quotes, the actual National Park Visitor Center.
Only who can prevent forest fires? You pressed you, referring to me. That is incorrect. The correct answer is you.
Mom, can Lisa and I play outside, away from the bear?
To be fair, it's a pretty bad question. That should have been reworded or removed from the test, the wilderness test.
You said me?
Referring to you. That is incorrect. The correct answer is you.
Referring to...
Don't worry, Robbie. Okay. I know you were a lowly English major. You'll never figure it out.
Hey, man. Hey, I'm good at one thing.
Video games?
Sometimes.
Sometimes. Anyway, at this point, we cut back to Smithers, who is by himself at this point and is wandering through the wilderness, angry at Mr. Burns, and begins to scream about kicking Mr. Burns and his bony old behind, which happens to echo. And Mr. Burns hears it and attributes it to Homer. But he takes it as a compliment because he's been watching his figure, which... He has like 0% body fat, so I don't really know how that helps, but hey.
He's getting less of the eating less of the wheat pillows.
Yes, a pillow of shredded wheat, a dodo egg.
He's having less postum.
Whatever that is.
We've covered postum before. If you'd like to know what postum is, go listen to Homer the Smithers and we talk at length about postum.
Postum. And I don't remember what it is at all.
I'm going to say the word again. Postum.
It's like Ovaltine, but postum. However, at this point, Smithers is hit in the head with a snowball, which turns out was thrown by Bart. Bart and Lisa decide that they're going to join him and help out, despite his bad mood. Homer and Burns, however, have found a little something to help them in their journey.
Tell me, Simpson, if an opportunity arose for taking a small shortcut... You wouldn't be averse to taking it, would you?
Not as such.
Neither would I. I've always felt that there's far too much hysteria these days about so-called cheating.
Yes, a lot of hysteria.
Mm-hmm. If you can take advantage of a situation in some way, it's your duty as an American to do it. Why should the race always be to the swift, or the jumble to the quick-witted? Should they be allowed to win merely because of the gifts God gave them? Well, I say, cheating is the gift man gives himself.
Mr. Burns, I insist that we cheat.
Excellent. And to do so, I propose we travel by... horselessly.
Wow, you sure know how to cheat, Mr. Burns.
Yes, well, I'm older than you. You know, Simpson, you're not as objectionable as you seemed when we first met.
No, sir, I am not.
This is the most passive I think Homer has ever been.
It's, again, it is largely concerned with, like, this very kind of plain conversation about cheating. It's not like big and extravagant, and it's not like it's noticeable because of the fact that usually the Simpsons are very dense with jokes and gags and stuff, and this is kind of slower paced and a little bit stretched out and a little bit more at ease. I don't know.
Well, I think they build up the jokes more. It's like they're willing to stretch it out to make the joke funnier.
Yeah, and it's there's humor because it's unique and kind of they don't do it as often. It feels novel and is funny in because of that, you know, because of the difference in how Simpsons episodes usually go. And now this one, aside from Rocket House and the and presidential snowman killers, hallucinatory snowman. Whatever, it changes its pace, and I really appreciate it. Also, I forgot to mention, Burns recognizes Homer. He names him.
That's true. We've gone past the whole thing where he doesn't understand who Homer is anymore.
Well, not this episode. He doesn't. I don't know. I am fairly certain we will see later on in following episodes.
I should make a note, but like things to look for in future episodes, whether a Burns recognizes Homer, because I feel like after the whole "Who Shot Mr. Burns," I'm pretty sure from then on he tends to remember who Homer is.
Nah, not all the time. They are not consistent.
Okay,
I remember noting specifically after that episode a time when he forgot Homer's name, but I think him remembering Simpson in this instance also kind of speaks to the slight tweak on Burns, you know, in this episode where he's promoting teamwork, so he's a little bit more friendly, and you're like, maybe he seems a little bit happier in this episode in general. Like he wants to liven up the plan.
That's true. Yeah,
he's gonna be friendly with Homer, you know, and help him cheat to win.
It's amazing what lengths people will go to make their own lives more fun.
Yes. And also the Bart and Lisa and Smithers thing, we haven't really seen them together. We saw Lisa with Smithers in Malibu, Lisa, but you know, in the, what's the name of the episode? Am I crazy?
Which one, the Malibu Stacy episode?
Yeah, what's the name of that episode? It's not Malibu Lisa. Am I making that up? I might be making that up.
I'm pretty sure it's, no, it's not Malibu Lisa. Lisa Lionheart is the doll.
Yeah.
Ah, crap. Go look it up. Oh, Lisa versus Malibu Stacy.
Versus Malibu Stacy. We saw Lisa briefly at Rack with Smithers in that, but seeing just Bart and Lisa kind of be kids around Smithers, it is filled a lot with a lot of kind of boring, kind of just them being kids and having, you know, them not seeing the serious of what Smithers is facing. It's fresh. It feels good. It's fun.
Indeed. When we go back, we see Marge seeing an awful, awful education film that appeared to have been recorded sometime in like the 40s because the audio quality is terrible, or it was recorded on an early cell phone. You never know. At the point, she can't find Bart and Lisa, obviously, because Bart and Lisa wandered off with Smithers. So she grabs the ranger and they take the chairlift so they can see the area directly beneath the chairlift, which, you know, obviously they're probably not going to find him. But oh, wait, they do, because they happen to be walking directly beneath the chairlift. Marge wants to get off, but obviously you can't just jump down from a chairlift. And then the chairlift starts to break because, you know, budget cuts. These kind of things happen.
The comment on that educational video is meant to be John Muir.
Who is that?
Naturalist who founded the Sierra Club.
Oh, Sierra Club. I thought you said CR Club. What is a CR Club?
It's a CR Club. Uh-huh. You founded the CR Club.
It's the Revolution Club.
Yes, you've never been on a chairlift either, Matt, I assume.
You are correct. I have not.
They're terrifying.
I bet. I mean, you're just hanging up there with... Like, well, don't lean forward.
A lot of them have bars now you can put down. Mm-hmm.
Now,
if you,
we only lost like 80 something people, and then there's a bar there.
I think it's largely for concerns about lawsuits. I don't think it's actually, because a lot of the people actually, when I last was on a mountain in the snow, when people were snowboarding and skiing, they didn't use the bar because they just wanted, you know, they've ridden up the thing a million times. It's not, you know, it's normal to them now. They didn't bother putting it down, but for all us people who have only done it once or twice, I was, and I'm generally not great with heights, especially when I'm just dangling.
That's when you feel the most alive, when you're just dangling out there, you know, hundreds of feet in the air.
It was like 50 or I would say 50 feet high.
50 feet is really high to be just sitting down without a bar on you.
There's a bar.
That's like,
I had a bar.
I used
the bar. I was holding on to that bar pretty intently. I was pretty happy with my grip on that because that bar was going to save my life for somehow. I'm sure if the thing fell.
Was.
Yeah, that was the thing that was keeping me from dying.
Anyway. Burns and Homer, thanks to their use of the snowmobile, arrive at the cabin. They've got heat, electricity, sandwiches, champagne. They're living the good life. Meanwhile, poor Smithers is out with Bart and Lisa. Bart wants to dig for gold, and Lisa finds every animal on the mountain that is somehow in pain, because that's how Lisa rolls.
I like the little tiny mention. She's like, I found another injured shrew.
Yeah,
it's not.
And then Smithers asks, "Are there any healthy animals?" No, there's not.
This is not the first shrew that Lisa has found. I mean, it's in character. I think again, these are very little small touches of character based of like slice of life humor, which we don't really see a lot of. We generally see these kinds of jokes on around the edges of the main plot, and I guess that's true in this instance as well. But they seem to be given more time. In this episode.
It's true. While this is happening, Homer and Burns are getting comfortable, and unfortunately, things don't go so well for them.
Oh, these sure are comfortable chairs.
Oh, yes, sitting. The great leveler, from the mightiest pharaoh to the lowliest peasant. Who doesn't enjoy a good sit?
Oh, man, you are so right. Did you ever sit like this?
Yes, yes, that's it. Oh, I could go for one of those right now. The only hard part is getting up.
Why get up? Here's a little move I've been tinkering with. Say I want that bowl of dip.
Why, you'd have to get up.
Oh?
Sir, I am in your debt.
Use it wisely, my friend.
Hey, did you hear something?
No.
Did I?
I don't know.
So, yes, what you heard was an avalanche that proceeds to bury the cabin that everyone is supposed to be working towards, which will lead to some fun things later on. However, Homer and Mr. Burns, they are stuck in the cabin. Homer attempts to get out. He opens the door. Snow comes in. He opens the window. Snow comes in. He tries the door again. More snow comes in. So, you know, obviously, Homer's the brains of this operation.
It's, again, the repetition of just, you do it one time, it's not funny, but then you do it three more times. It's the Sideshow Bob stepping on rakes. It is.
It's funny, then it's not funny, and then it's funny again.
Yeah. And there's a lot of those jokes. And again, they talk a lot about this is like the most Schwartzweldian of episodes. And they had to, like they said, there's lots of rewrites in this because they had to, it was even crazier in time and more Schwartzweldian, whatever that means. I guess wow. You probably, if you read his books, is probably as Schwartzweldian as things get. And they had to kind of tame it into this shape. But it still, I think, has a lot of hallmarks of Schwartzwelder-type episodes. And that type of humor is something I typify. It's that kind of like, hey, we do it once, and then we do it twice, and then we do it five more times, and then it's funny again.
It's true. It really helps because that's not the kind of thing that you think would be funny, but you do it that many times, and it starts to get a little funny because it's just so absurd. Absurdist humor is fine. Awkward humor is not. Let's all agree on that. But at this point, Burns notices there's a telegraph in the cabin because that's the communication they have is a telegraph. However, unfortunately, the other end of that telegraph is in some kind of museum about the invention of the telegraph because that's where telegraphs belong.
Come on, Lenny, don't you know Morse code?
I know like half the alphabet in Morse code. Maybe. It's probably closer to a quarter now. I can SOS. That's about it.
That just makes me think anyway, of Kofi Kingston's old theme song. He's a wrestler.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, I have no idea who that is.
He's a member of the New Day.
Oh, now it's so obvious to me.
Okay, good. I'm glad.
Lenny and Carl are actually the first real people to arrive at the cabin, but unfortunately it's buried under snow, so they have to have a little discussion about, you know, is this the cabin? And then I believe it is Lenny that suggests, or no, Carl that suggests that maybe the cabin is a metaphorical cabin that's inside them that feels good about teamwork. And then Lenny reigns at his parade by saying they said there'd be sandwiches because, you know, sandwiches are not metaphorical. I hope not, because sandwiches are delicious. And I really wish I captured this, but I didn't for some reason. However, Homer and Burns have begun to attempt to dig their way out. And Mr. Burns, surprisingly, not the best digger.
Simpson, I have a confession. I'm not quite the tunnel digger I made myself out to be.
You can supervise me.
All right, good. Let's dig. That's right, dig some more. Oh, we make quite a duo, Burns and associate. No, no, what am I thinking? Burns and teammate. We made it, old friend.
We sure did.
Huzzah!
So, yes, that is how the act ends, with yet another avalanche burying the cabin and forcing them back inside.
And we come back from commercial to lots more avalanches.
What happened?
I think when we yelled, we caused another avalanche.
We should be careful not to speak unless it's absolutely, positively necessary.
Shh. You're causing more avalanches. I think they stopped.
Let's go.
I think that's it, man.
Is it okay to talk now? Okay, good.
I think that's it. There's the avalanches. Again, another bit of the let's just do this until it's funny, then it's dumb, and then it's funny again. And the sound design is also really excellent in this. It does really handle. They did a lot of work in, because this is a new setting. We've really never seen them in a snowy mountain setting really before. So they had to design all this stuff again. I always like those episodes, like the first time we've seen them delve into a new biome, basically. And, you know, you see the kids in their snow clothes. You get to see, you know, the cabins and the snowy trees and the Simpson style, which we don't really see. You get to see all of Homer's coworkers in snow clothes as well. It's very fresh and feels very interesting just because of how different that is as well. And the sound is, you know, as much a part of that as anything. You know, you walk through the snow, you get the snow crunchy noises. They have the kind of the silence and the echoes, which they show with Smithers yelling. And then the crashing cacophony of avalanches and of the Rocket House, which we'll hear later.
Oh, Rocket House.
It all adds to the episode and makes it feel complete and real. Which again, I think this episode also contributes a little bit to that by showing the coworkers on this weird kind of corporate outing and the family just kind of doing their own thing. It also lends a kind of credibility to the Simpsons and Springfield as a real place in a place that feels lived and real, and adds to depth of all the episodes. At this point of the episode, Homer and Mr. Burns are stuck in the cabin. And everyone else is basically arriving at what we find out is a ranger station. And then we jump back and forth between the two parties. And everyone's kind of grouped up together in the two groups. Mr. Burns and Homer start going crazy.
We must be covered by 1,000 feet of snow.
It could be days before they find us.
No books, no radio, no board games. Ah, a Bazooka Joe comic.
I heard that one 75 years ago.
We could build snowmen.
No, I have a better idea. We could build real men out of snow.
Oh. Okay.
Homer's... Okay. Like, it's... that you mentioned earlier, Homer, how peaceful and calm and placative Homer was, just going along with Mr. Burns.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still the, and he's still in that kind of place, but now that Mr. Burns isn't friendly anymore, now Mr. Burns is starting to go a little crazy, getting that cabin,
just a little bit,
getting that cabin fever. You know, after 30 minutes of being in a cabin, not necessarily the best. You know, we cut over to the people at all arriving at the ranger station, which they are not sure if it's the cabin or not. Homer and Mr. Burns are still going crazy.
206 bones, 50 miles of small intestine, full pouting lips, where this fellow is less a snowman than a god. Well, we've managed to stave off cabin fever for a few hours. I think we should dress the snowmen.
Agreed.
Look at them. Smug and secure in their finery. Mocking us.
They're just snowmen, Mr. Burns.
Snowmen have peepers. Peepers to watch. To watch for our moment of weakness, and then baff comes the knock on the head, and we're down.
What do we do?
Oh, wouldn't you like to know?
So, the paranoia sits in.
That's something what I'd call insanity.
Yeah, it's a little onset is a little quick, but, you know, whatever. Burns is probably right on the edge anyway. He's always right there on the precipice of insanity.
That's true. Homer's a little closer, or a little further from the edge, I should say, but he's very easily pushed over.
Yeah, I mean, he can't help it. He's in a rough situation. You know, he's in a stuck in a cabin with a crazy old man who thinks the snowmen are real people. Marge and finally the original ranger arrives at the ranger station and tells everyone, no, this is just a ranger station. This is not the right cabin. The other cabin is over there. And at this point they realize, that means that cabin got covered in an avalanche. And that's probably why we're missing these people, et cetera, et cetera. And they decide they're going to go search for them. Mr. Burns and Homer they both basically are lapsing in insanity and are on edge, right on the edge of combat.
I'm trapped with a madman. Look at him, staring into me, filling my mind with paranoid thoughts.
Look at his eyes. He's trying to hypnotize me, but not in the good Las Vegas way.
I know what he's up to. He's thinking of killing me, then riding my carcass down the mountain to safety. He's truly gone mad if he's thinking that. Well, he can't kill me if I kill him first. I'll kill you, you bloated museum of treachery.
You and what army?
So, the rest of this is a big...
I guess it was a visual gag.
It's all visual gags. It's not really. It's not going to tell anybody anything to hear a lot of grunting noises. But we do see Burns' snowman army, who are dressed like, I think, German World War I soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
And then we see Homer's power, political power, and it is Abraham Lincoln, Theodore Roosevelt, Gandhi, and Mao Zedong, I believe.
Weird last number. Like everyone else, I'm like, okay, it makes sense. You know, that they generally fought for freedom. Mao Zedong, not so much.
Also, I mean, Gandhi wasn't. He
fought for freedom, but not in the best way.
He was not. Yeah, he did some not great things along the way, I think. I mean, honestly, if we're going to start talking about the bad parts of some historic, I could find plenty of them from Theodore Roosevelt and Lincoln. It's just not as much probably as certainly Mao Zedong and a little bit of Gandhi. I mean, especially, and Gandhi in Civ games on top, like, I think that adds to his danger of, you know, basically destroying the world in Civ 5. Is he the same in Civ 6?
Not as bad.
Okay. He's not as much of a sociopathic monster as he was in Civ 5.
Nope. He still seems to be a little too happy to go to war. Okay. But beyond that.
Well, I mean, it speaks to his nature, I guess. The Ranger and the rest of Homer's coworkers are about to go try and find them. Of course, they have to tell the children the good, almost certainly good result that they will find.
Okay, search party, before we set out, let's take a moment to humor the children. Kids, your father's going to be just fine. Okay, everybody, put on your corpse handling gloves. We've got two frozen bodies buried somewhere in this mountain.
Did you hear that, Lise? Dad's going to be just fine.
Look, what's that?
We'll be dashed to pieces.
Oh, Lord, protect this rocket house and all who dwell within the rocket house.
I had to capture the Rocket House prayer, of course. It's very important.
Well, of course, yeah.
Yeah. During the flight, Mr. Burns sparks the propane tank, and somehow it becomes a rocket. Best not to think about it.
Well, it explodes out the other end.
Best not to think about physics too much, in this case.
Yep. Otherwise, your brain will hurt.
I mean, this is scientifically completely factual about what would happen if you hit a propane tank with a fireplace poker, right?
Yes, it will not explode in your face. It will become a rocket. So if you like rockets, don't do this anyway.
Come on, Matt. What if I want a rocket house?
Then you have to strap some actual rockets to your house.
Okay. Well, we get the rocket house line. I had to include, even if it is in just the middle of a lot of real loud blasting noises. That's basically what the next minute of the episode is after that, is basically just like noises. And the rocket house, luckily, is aimed right for the search party, so they don't need to search anymore.
That's right. They were saving them effort.
Exactly. Everyone scatters because they don't want to hit by the rocket house, but the propane tank luckily just runs out right in time, and it coasts right in to sit next to the Ranger station. Burns and Homer emerge safe and sound. They were really only missing for maybe an hour. They weren't.
No one would have even cared, probably.
Yeah, it wasn't a big deal. But, I mean, I get it. The Rocket House got them out of the mess. So I think it's probably necessary that they devolved in insanity and hallucinations and fighting to the death.
Like you do when you're trapped for an hour with someone you don't know.
Yeah, I mean, well, they do know each other. I mean, it's trapped for an hour with your boss.
It's true. Bosses are the worst. We all know this.
I mean, it just depends on the boss. Some people have good bosses. I've had good bosses.
True. I had an extraordinary number of good bosses.
Okay. Hear that, Matt's bosses? All who listen to this podcast? Matt loves you. Give him a raise.
None of them will ever listen to this.
Shh. He doesn't mean that.
Uh-huh.
But Mr. Burns quickly reminds everyone that for some reason that contest is still going. So everyone squeezes into the cabin at the last second. Lenny is left out in the cold, and he is fired. Not really, because Burns almost immediately says, no one's going to get fired. However, Burns and Homer do share a moment as the episode ends.
Well, Simpson, I must say, once you've been through something like that with a person, you never want to see that person again.
You said it, you weirdo.
And that's how the episode ends. I don't know how else they would end it. Like, it's a weird episode, so the dismount is probably the hardest part.
It's true. I mean, it's really hard to figure out how to end this, and I think it's kind of abrupt at the end there, but it works out really well, especially with the last little exchange between Homer and Burns. Like you said, this episode is, I don't want to call it slow, because it's not. It's not like you get bored in the middle, but every joke has more of a lead-up than we're used to with most Simpsons episodes, and I honestly think it actually works really well, because we're used to, you know, fast-paced gags, in and out, chop-chop, which I really like, but in this case, it's enough interesting build-up to keep your attention until the joke and the payoff hits, which is unusual for The Simpsons.
It's just, it's paced somewhat differently than most Simpsons episodes. Mm-hmm. It reminds me of Bart on the Road in a lot of ways. It reminds me of kind of just, like, the situations in Bart on the Road are a little bit more absurd for, largely, although, I, again, Rocket House. But they also are you know, give the characters time to breathe and kind of let their weird, like, weird quirks and charm of each character kind of let them carry the kind of comedic load a lot of the time. And I think that this is also that mixed with a lot of Schwartzwaldian physical slash absurdist humor, which I think it works very well. And I think actually provides kind of a change of pace to that other change of pace. It again, the variety here on display is relatively impressive. And I think the writing is actually really strong. I think that is the thing that I take away after rewatching this, is that it's not just like, oh, well, yeah, there's Rocket House. It is also, there's a lot of like clever character-based gags in here that are very, like, very kind of subtle, like Lisa, another injured true, like just those little tiny touches there. They really add a lot of flavor.
I almost forgot one of the best jokes in the episode, where Bart says, what comes after 12? One. No, after 12. 1280. Yeah.
Yes, that is also really good. Like those, again, they're very subtle, kind of just like they don't punch you in the face with their obviousness. There's always kind of those kinds of jokes in The Simpsons, but in this case, I think they are given a little bit more time, a little bit more room. That's it. That's how the episode ends. I really like this episode. It's refreshing, honestly. I think that this season, it has some of my favorite episodes, but even the episodes I don't think like are my favorite, aren't in my top five or something, they have a lot of variety in them. They're very different. Like you have Rodney Dangerfield is a guest star, and kind of it is his episode. You have an episode like this that really kind of highlights a different pace, a different setting. And there's a lot of those types of episodes in this season. I think this is another one that really has a lot of the typical great Simpsons writing, but kind of executes ideas a little bit differently.
I was saying that it's good every once in a while to get an episode that's paced differently. Because the Simpsons are good, even in a great season like season 8. It's every once in a while you want something a little bit different to keep you from getting bored. Like it's one thing to have, you know, a hit episode after hit episode, but occasionally you need something just a little bit different to make you appreciate the normal.
Yeah, and we will rank it at the end of the show. We have one submission for my favorite episode. This is from John. Hi, Matt and Robbie. After months of soul-searching, consultations with religious leaders, and several arguments with my girlfriend, I've determined my favorite episode is Mountain of Madness. From the only Who Can Prevent Forest Fires to the Rocket House joke, this episode is the first episode where I can remember my love for The Simpsons truly beginning. I don't recall where I was when Kennedy was shot, as not being born yet at the time, but I can tell you the exact time and place where I was when Homer prayed for all those who dwelled within the Rocket House. Other episodes may be better, but there's something about your first love, and Mountain of Madness is my first love of Simpsons episodes. Love the podcast. Keep up the great work. Good luck after season 8. If you have a particular episode that is your favorite, simply submit it to simpsonshowpod@gmail.com, explaining why a certain episode is your favorite, and I'll read it when we get to it. Next up, it's time for comments from the news group.
Okay, here we are. alt.nerd.obsessive.
Comments to News Group is where I'll comb through the old alt.tv.simpsons news group, see what people are talking about, what the week or two after an episode debuted, what their thoughts of it were, what the reviews were, what else they were talking about. Wildly disparate thoughts on this one, Matt.
Which I find weird, because, I mean, okay, I can kind of understand it, because like we said, this is a little different from a normal Simpsons episode, but I feel like generally it's just a really good episode all around. I mean, what were people complaining about?
I don't want to paint everyone, like I said, a lot of people really like this. There was multiples A's and B's, and like, this is great. And some are like, I think someone said best episode since 22 short films. But some people are like, this is terrible. It was dull. It was boring. And they got, the same people who didn't like this episode, are the same people who didn't like the Rakes gag, the Sideshow Bob Rakes gag.
Yeah, I can see that. Which I mean, they're wrong.
I was going to say, like, I just put them in our notes. Some people are dumb and wrong. We can't help that. But they were like, this isn't good. I don't like it. It's not funny. And I mean, it's okay. Some people are just wrong about their lives, and they can't help that. Lots of people complaining about King of the Hill talk in their Simpsons forum. And a lot of people varying thoughts about King of the Hill. Some people really like it, some people don't. Also, people recommending Duckman, because Duckman's also spinning up about this time in USA. We've done an episode about it on our Patreon. I think you can TLDR is Duckman's not good. That's my thoughts. Duckman's not good.
No, it's I'm sure at this point it felt still kind of fresh, but these days not so much anymore.
No, it's kind of it. You can watch any of these episodes of The Simpsons, and almost all of them still feel they feel like they were made yesterday to me. Like I could watch them forever for the rest of my life, never go, oh, this feels like it was made in 1996. You watch Duckman, you're like, wow, this was definitely made in 1996 or 97 or whatever. It definitely is of its time, but nothing much else. Some people there's arguing about this. Some guys like, you do realize Springfield's just kind of not in any real state for on purpose. And then people are like, no, you're wrong. You're dumb.
Oh my God. How dumb do you have to be?
It's the internet, Matt. Come on. There's always people to argue
with.
I know. Okay. Well, that's it. Not much else. The typical stuff. I'm only trying to mention things I think are new. I'm not going to hash up every time someone talks about Smithers' sexuality. So it's just not that interesting to me anymore. We can move on. It is next. Next. It is next. Our listener question of the week.
Let's try one more number.
Yellow?
KBBL is going to give me something stupid.
Well, hot dog, we have a wiener.
Yellow?
Our listener question of the week this week is, what is your favorite sports moment? There's so many of them. They're all so good. Thanks everyone who takes the time to answer. I always kind of impressed by just the volume of answers, Homer.
And the variety.
Yes. Got a lot of Homer at the bat answers. I'm unsurprising. first from Jeff, Homer watching a baseball game sober. The windup and the two pitch. Oh no, sir. Wait a minute. The batter is calling for time. Looks like he's going and getting himself a new bat. Now there's a beach ball on the field. And the ball boys are discussing which one of them's going to go get it. The announcer's delivery cracks me up every time. I believe that's Duffless. I think it's in Duffless, right?
I think so, yeah.
From Upcar, good practice, kids. Now it's time for the easiest part of any coach's job, the cuts. Though I wasn't able to cut everyone I wanted to, I have cut a lot of you. Wendell is cut. Rudy is cut. Janie, you're gone. Steven, I like your hustle, so I was so hard to cut you. Congratulations, the rest of you made the team. Except you, and you. Yeah. From Ken, Marge's baseball play-by-play from Homer at the bat perfectly summarizes my knowledge of all sports, and I quote it surprisingly regularly. And the next man wants to hit the ball, too. And he does. And there he goes off in that direction. And everyone is happy. Oh, Marge. From David, Mr. Burns confusing baseball hand signals, also from Homer at the bat. He then suggests that I'm going to find this a little offensive. When I lose, it's not a given. I could perform some sort of miracle. And win, he says, when you lose next season's trivia challenge, you could recreate this in a video. And that'd be easy. I'd be happy to do that. That's an easy, that takes like, what, a minute at most? 30 seconds? I can look like a fool. That's fine. It doesn't require me eating any cheese. I'm all for it. That's where I'm at this point.
That's true. Anything that doesn't cause you to eat anything gross, I think we'd be okay with.
I mean, I would drink that milkshake again before I ate that cheese again.
Yeah, well.
Milkshake had chocolate in it. From Austin, and Homer loves slanders, Mr. Burns' inspirational pep talk to the football team. Men, there is a little crippled boy sitting in a hospital who wants you to win this game. I know, because I crippled him myself to inspire you. I hope they win, or Mr. Burns said he's coming back. from Sean, everything that happens to all the major leaguers in Homer at the bat, Ozzie Smith falls off the face of the earth, Steve Stax looking at serious jail time, Don Mattingly getting knocked out by Barney. From Jeffrey, counterfeit tickets. Yeah, see the holograms missing? And there's no such team as the Spungos. And finally, these appear to be printed on some sort of cracker. Cracker tickets. Edible tickets. That's the future.
Yummy.
From Mitch, one of my favorite ever episodes is Dead Putting Society, so I have to go with either Homer forcing Bart to name his putter Charlene. Who's Charlene? I'll show you who Charlene is. Or teaching him to putt. Keep your head down and follow through. Ball misses by less than an inch. Okay, that didn't work. This time, move your head and don't follow through. from Nancy, my favorite is from Lisa on Ice. Still get emotional during the montage Lisa and Bart have at the end. Plus, it's also empowering that Lisa competes in a male-dominated sport. Tom, Mattingly, I thought I told you to trim those sideburns. from Mizzy, football to the groin.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, I mean,
I guess it's technically a sports moment because it involves a football.
It has a football in it, Matt. What do you? George at Pompey. George, the U.S. versus non-U.S. commentary on soccer match from Cartridge Funny. It's funny because it's true. Passes. He passes to the wing. Passes. From Brandon at Funny Film Fan. Possibly the best moment in all of The Simpsons is the end of Lisa on Ice when where Bart and Lisa hug. Alan Titus at Alan Titus. Homer using Why Can't We Be Friends as his entrance music in the boxing match against Dredrick Tatum. Justin at Justin R. Wood. When the kids taunt Daryl Strawberry and a tear appears in his eye.
Daryl.
Daniel Slaughter at Vegiduck. The compound fracture, truly one of football's greatest injuries. Carolyn at Karolinski. Nacho man, mainly because that nacho hat looked delicious. Justin at Fodrod of Oz. Rainier Wolfcastle. I'm going to demolish the YMCA and hunt the most dangerous game, man. And Lenny, I'm taking the ball and going home. It begins. And finally from John at John Wynn 51. It's your child versus mine. The winner will be showered with praise. The loser will be taunted and booed until my throat is sore. Also, a lot of Lisa on Ice as well. A lot of Lisa on Ice.
Yeah.
Oh, I lied. There's more. So. From Tina, favorite sports moments from the episode that we had Bart as a healer when he was trying to heal the kicker's leg, but after the kick when the ball was going too low to reach the goalpost, the detached leg appears in frame.
Oh, man, I forgot about that episode.
It kicks it again, making the goal. It's really grotesque, too. It's really gross. From Kyle, by far my favorite sports moment would be Bleeding Gums Murphy singing the national anthem for 26 minutes and dancing Homer. Just absolutely hilarious to me, and I think of it every sporting event I watch or attend. Finally, from Alex, favorite sports moment is from Lisa on Ice. Favorite moment comes when Bart is teasing Lisa by shooting trash at her after his game. When Apu notices from afar Lisa's natural ability to block the flying piece of garbage, then rips a slap shot right at Lisa, who catches the puck with her bare hand. Beyond the hilarious heads up little girl line from Apu, this moment stuck with me as a kid because I have fairly similar goaltending epiphany myself. One day while playing street hockey, my brother and his older friends decided to torture me by shooting at the net with my unprotected 6-year-old body in front of it. Don't worry, it was only tennis balls. After the first shot hit me in the head, I realized there's nothing to be afraid of, and I myself had a natural ability as a goalie where I would continue to play throughout my hockey career. Watching Lisa discover her own goaltending skills, in addition to the fact that for a week, the Simpsons were a hockey family very similar to mine, made this one of my all-time favorite episodes growing up. Whew! Matt? What's your answer?
Oh, it's a tough one, actually. One, I really enjoy the end of Lisa on Ice, so that was very close for me. But I'm actually going to pick the Homer cutting people line. Him just being so nonchalant about cutting all those kids when they were on the team before is just hilarious, especially the end when he's like, you, and you, which I believe includes Rod and Todd.
Well, I mean, if I was going to cut people, Rod and Todd probably would be on the list.
Yeah,
they're probably not. I mean, I probably wouldn't cut any children because it doesn't cost anything for them to sit on the bench. And you need that depth. What if someone gets hurt? It's football.
And they're kids. They will get hurt, or at least think they got hurt.
Yes, pain. My answer is basically all the maladies, all the things that happen to the baseball players in Homer at the Bat. I really love baseball. When the episode was on, I was a big fan, and I loved Ken Griffey Jr., and that he was in the episode. Two of my favorite things in the same thing. It was great. But primarily Mattingly and his sideburns. That's the thing I think about most. Yes. And it's still a meme that works really well for when people ever cut their hair and they can't. They're like, Mattingly sideburns always is beautiful. Next week's question. What is your favorite Lenny/Carl quote?
Oh, man.
So this could be a quote from Lenny, could be a quote from Carl, but I'm not going to lie and say if it is between the two, if it is a moment, if it's involving both, bonus points, get us a gold star, perhaps. All those gold stars I have, just throw them out. I'll post this question on all our social media, facebook.com/TheSimpsonsShowPod, Twitter @SimpsonsShowPod, and again, you can email us at SimpsonsShowPod@gmail.com. Matt?
Yes, Robbie?
It is time, once again, for the new Google Trivia Challenge.
I am too smart. I am too smart. S-M-R-T. I mean S-M-A-R-R-T.
The No Google Trivia Challenge, where Matt and I each challenge each other with 3 trivia questions, one easy, one medium, and one hard, and try and stump the other. We have a wager for this season. Whoever loses has to record themselves singing a song from The Simpsons of the winner's choosing. I'm currently losing by 14 points.
Got this, Robbie. You got this. Yeah, easy questions for you this week.
Yeah, great. Cool. I need a lot of them. Can we do like 6 easy questions that are all worth 10 points each?
I don't know if that lasts, that 10 points each thing.
I need a cushion, Matt. It's not going to, like, even if I get, okay, whatever. I'm not feeling, every other season so far, it's been at a point where I go, I could still win this. At least some, at least at this point in the season, but 14 points behind already. I need to get serious about this. Okay, Matt, I'm going to start us off. I'm going to give you an easy question. Are you ready?
Suppose your easy questions are never as easy as you think they are.
Yet you always get them right. Strangely how that works, huh?
Not always. Definitely not always.
Almost always. From season 22's Flaming Moe, Moe renames Moe's Tavern to what?
What does he rename? Is it just Flaming Moe's?
Is that your answer?
Yeah.
It is incorrect.
No.
It is simply Moe's without an E. Get it?
That's a joke. I get it. I like jokes.
Yeah, jokes are great.
Or I watch all those seasons again at some point. All right, ready for your easy question?
Okay, yes. Give me an easy question.
All right, fine. What fruit does Homer develop in EIEI Annoyed Grunt?
Oh, that would be tamako.
Yes, an actual easy question.
Come on. We literally had a trivia question about the various names of Moe's Bar last week.
Yeah, I don't remember that one.
Well, that's not my fault.
All right, go on.
Your medium question. Also, these are all from Flaming Moe. Skinner tries to date the substitute music teacher named what?
What was her name? I have no idea.
Calliope Juniper.
That's a name. Yep.
That is a name. I'm worried that I should have made this the hard question and the medium question. But we will see.
Well, let's hope you're right. All right. Mm-hmm. All right. Your medium question. What movie inspires Homer to start dueling in EIEI? Annoyed Grunt.
I forgot that that happens in that episode. All I remember is the crazy animals. What movie inspires him to start dueling? And he ends up dueling the rich Texan, right? Yeah.
Nope. Somebody else.
Oh, really?
A Southern Gentleman, I believe, is his name.
Oh, it's not the rich Texan? It's a different character?
It is not.
Oh, okay. That very clever and original name, the Southern Gentleman.
Yes.
Stop making noises. Hey, it doesn't help me. I need silence to focus. It's a movie with he slaps the gloves. Is it a real movie?
No, it is not a real movie.
That's what I thought. Then I have no chance. I don't know. It would be I don't know. What is it, Matt? I don't know. I have no guess.
It is The Poke of Zorro.
All right. Yeah, I remember that now that you say that, but I'm okay. Mm-hmm. All right, your hard question. Smithers is denied access to what bar?
To what bar? I have no idea. I really should watch this episode again, apparently.
You remember those jokes? It is the League of Extra Horny Gentlemen.
Of course it is.
Of course. Well, uh-huh. What's my hard question? I'm sure I'll get it.
All right, your hard question. Who is the villain in Poke of Zorro?
Poke of Zorro. Okay, who does Zorro fight? I don't even know. I don't know anything about Zorro. I've never watched a Zorro thing in my entire life, and I can't even remember this. Why couldn't you ask me about the farm animals, Matt? That's the part of this episode I remember.
What am I going to ask about farm animals?
I don't know. Come up with something. The enemy, the villain in The Poke of Zorro is... Do you need a name?
Yes.
Okay. It is... I don't know. I don't even have a guess. I have no idea.
Hey, so we're the same. It is the Scarlet Pimpernel.
Oh, my... I'm supposed to remember that.
Mm-hmm. I remembered it.
It's because you're superhuman.
Not superhuman about seasons 20 and on, apparently.
Well, that's what. Why do you think I do it, Matt? That's why I got to choose those seasons. It's the only way I can catch up. I got 1 point on you this week. That's all I can do. Mm-hmm. It's slowly and surely. If I do that every week from here on, I might tie you. Maybe.
Maybe. We'll see. I'll go home this weekend and tomorrow and watch every episode from season 20.
No, don't do that.
Why not?
You should not. You should deprive yourself of all Simpsons. Anything that's not our specific episode we're doing this week, then you shouldn't look at or pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
You should actually actively try and forget those things.
There are very few things I've ever tried to actually forget.
I know. That's why you're so difficult to beat. Okay, so I'm losing 34 to 21 through 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 episodes. I'm halfway through the season, and I think there's actually 25 episodes in the season, but roughly halfway, I'm down 13 points. I could, I think, exactly, if I do beat him by, if I do beat you by 1 point for the rest of the season, I can tie.
All right, then.
But I don't think I'm not easing up. I gotta be tough and difficult.
Mm-hmm.
How many milkshakes have you had to drink, Matt?
Zero, thank God.
Okay, how many slices of American cheese have you had to eat?
At one time, no more than like 8.
You've eaten 8 at a time? Ugh.
Yeah.
Ugh.
No. This was back when I was a preteen. It was rough.
You've had a strange life, Matt.
You're telling me.
With that, we can move on to our final segment. Segment we went every single episode with is time for Best Episode Ever.
Best Episode Ever.
Best Episode Ever is the part of the show where Matt and I rank the episodes categorically as we watch them chronologically, eventually compiling a list of every episode ever and how good they are. I compared this to Bart on the Road. Bart on the Road is currently number 32, Matt. Is it better than Bart on the Road?
I don't know. I like this episode more than Bart on the Road. But from an objective perspective, I'm not sure. Because Bart on the Road has a lot of memorable things, and I'm pretty sure the only thing that this episode has that's really memorable is the Rocket House.
That's not true.
So
you got the newsletter line, you got Rocket House line, you've got corpse handling gloves, you got the only way to prevent. You got the bear with the you me thing. I think there's a lot of classic stuff in this. The political powers. There's all kinds of stuff. I don't want to go by memories of like how memorable it is. It's how good it is, Matt. You think it's better than Bart on the Road?
I do. I enjoy it more.
I think it's better than I don't know. I think it's close. I think Bart on the Road is very good. I think they're easier to compare because they're close to each other. I think it is better than Bart on the Road, but not necessarily a lot better than Bart on the Road.
Yeah, I can definitely agree to that.
There is, let's see, right above that is Lisa on Ice.
I don't know. I don't think it's better than Lisa on Ice, to be honest with you. I really enjoy the Bart-Lisa dynamic. They've got a lot of good jokes, and it's just got such iconic family moments in it that I would find it hard to put above Lisa on Ice.
I think I agree with you. I think that Lisa on Ice hangs more as a cohesive whole. I think this is Mountain of Madness is probably not never. It's just I don't think in the way both of us generally perceive quality in episodes.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably just not going to be able to hang with stuff higher up because it's has a lot of kind of weirder. It's a weirder pace and weirder inclusion of kinds of jokes it has and all that stuff, which we both like, but not enough to say, oh, it's in the top 10 or it's in the top 5. But I think Lisa on Ice does because it is kind of just it's about one thing, while Mountain of Madness, I don't necessarily think it's about anything, but it's just really funny and really smartly written.
Right.
So, 32?
32 sounds good.
Okay. Mountain of Madness. Number 32. No pain on that one. That was easy. So
no massive arguments.
No, I don't think we've ever had a massive argument. We may have one when we get to Homer's Enemy. Cape Fear, still number one on our list. Last place, Homer's Odyssey, 155. Definitely won't be last forever. Promise. I will.
We're getting close. Another few seasons.
I'll force it. Our next episode is what, Matt?
Oh, you're making me go look it up, aren't you?
I got it. It is Simpsons Califragilistic Expiala Annoyed Grouchus.
Oh, Lord.
Sherry Bobbins.
Sure is.
I love Sherry Bobbins. I love Simpsons Califragilistic Expiala Docious. I love this episode. Matt sounds a little hesitant, and that makes me even more excited to talk about it. Obviously,
still a good episode. It's just I don't know if it's worth all of that.
Oh, I will. I have a lot of feelings about Sherry Bobbins, and we're going to talk about all of them, man. I know you're very excited already.
That's true. I am.
I can hear it in your voice.
I'm super excited, Robbie.
You can don't hide that enthusiasm. Just let it breathe. Let it out. Let it out in the world.
Yep.
Sure, you can find this list, the best episode ever list, on our website. It's simply thesimpsonshow.com. Links to everything there, to our Facebook, links to our Twitter, links to our RSS feed, links to our Patreon if you want to support the show, help keep us ad-free. Really appreciate that. Also, this list, broken down by season and in total. Also, Trials of Horror segments ranked separately. I think it'll do it for this episode. You can find me on Twitter at Robbie Dorman. Easy, easy peasy. Please check out my other podcast, Handsome Boys Comics Hour. It's about comic books. And The Serial Fanaticist, which is about all kinds of stuff. The most recent episode is starring this very own Matt Hamm talking about Harry Potter with me, which we're going to do all the Harry Potter books one at a time.
It's true. Robbie, unfortunately, does not know that much about Harry Potter. So tune in and watch me school him.
Yeah, Matt's my tutor. He's tooting on.
Toot on.
Matt does not participate in social media unless you're certain love. Patreon backer, you will not find him.
That's true. However, I have placed a satellite in orbit that is quantum entangled with a receiver in my backyard. So if you like, all you have to do is shoot a little message towards that satellite included in a laser. It will be received and retransmitted instantaneously to me. So all you have to do is find that satellite. Should be completely easy to find. You guys know how to do that.
I'm going to trust you that everything you said was right.
It absolutely was.
Because I can't. You're above my level, Matt. You're above.
Robbie, if we didn't have quantum entanglement communicators, how would we communicate faster than the speed of light? I mean, we are an interstellar species, right?
We? Who's we? We are certainly not an interstellar species. Not yet.
Whoops.
I'm Robbie.
And I'm Matt.
And keep watching this.
Shh.